Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. It is Thursday, the 9th of August, Nagasaki Day. What day? Nagasaki. We wiped out 80,000, I think, on this day in 1945. Or was it more than that? Ushering in the atomic age. There was a memorial service in Nagasaki today, as there is every August 9th, and prayers for peace and the end of the use of nuclear weapons, nuclear power, and nuclear anything. So, just a quick acknowledgement that today is that day. I've talked about Brian Fisher before. Brian Fisher is the director of issues analysis for the American Family Association. That's the one that, runs it. They are real haters that run the American Family. The families that they talk about are robotic families. They are families that have given over their minds to religious superstition. They have given over their morality to these right-wing preachers. They have given over their children to lives of perpetual ignorance. That's the families that they're talking about. Brian Fisher also hosts a talk radio program on American Family Radio, and he writes a blog. Just by way of reference, this freak opposes a woman's right to privacy with her own physician. He opposes national health care. He opposes environmentalism. He opposes gay folk adopting babies that desperately need love and affection and a family. He opposes same-sex marriage. And his comments on racial and ethnic minorities were cited by the Southern Poverty Law Center as in explaining why they gave this group the designation of a hate group November a couple of years ago. Mark Potok, who runs the Southern Poverty Law Center, has been very clear in what the American, quote, family, end quote, association is all about. Recently, Brian Fisher has become a supporter of the AIDS denial movement. He had a guest on his program January this year, a prominent AIDS denialist, a freak named Peter Duesberg. On that show, Brian Fisher strongly supported Duesberg's contention that AIDS is not caused by the HIV virus, but in fact, AIDS is caused by recreational drug use. If that were the case, I and about 90% of people I know would be infected. But I can't dignify this creepy bastard with humor. Brian Fisher, further expanded on this nonsense in a post on his blog site, saying that it isn't possible for a virus to remain dormant for a long period of time. This is despite overwhelming scientific consensus that HIV can stay dormant for several years before the onset of AIDS. Anyway, in this freak monster Brian Fisher's view, HIV is a hoax and was concocted by cancer researchers who needed an excuse to keep getting their grants. See, this guy believes that if you develop cancer, you should die screaming in agony in your own feces, blood, vomit, and urine, because that's what the beloved Jesus Christ wants. This is what Brian Fisher believes. Now, obviously, he's insane, but he has a huge following of more insane people. Mormon Voices, a group associated with the Foundation for Apologetic Information Research, whatever that is, Mormon Voices has included Brian Fisher on its top 10 anti-Mormon statements of 2011 list for saying, quote, Mormonism is not an Orthodox Christian faith. It just is not. It's very clear that the Founding Fathers did not intend to preserve automatically religious liberty for non-Christian faiths, end quote. So this guy, this Brian Fisher, is about as sick as they come. He's about as degenerate as they come. He's about as mentally diseased as they come. You want to hear the latest? He has called for the establishment of a so-called underground railroad that would effectively steal children from same-sex parents and take them away. He defended this on his radio show, arguing that, quote, we must obey God's law, not man's law, end quote. If that were the case, I'm sure Brian Fisher would have been taken in the backyard by his parents when he was a boy and murdered, because that's what, is it Deuteronomy or Leviticus tells parents to do with their children if they don't behave. Also, God would have crushed him into a blip for wearing two different kinds of cloth at the same time. That's in there too, you half-baked freak. Fisher went on at length on his program about the case of a 10-year-old, she's 10 now, Isabella Miller Jenkins, who was kidnapped by her mother, Lisa Miller. Lisa Miller reportedly fled with her daughter to Nicaragua after losing a series of family court battles in Vermont with Janet Jenkins, her former lesbian partner, who had been granted court order visitation. Janet had been granted visitation. Lisa fled. The New York Times reported that Lisa had been assisted by evangelical groups who endorsed her decision to kidnap her daughter rather than to expose her to her former partner's, quote, homosexual lifestyle, end quote. In 2010, Lisa Miller was indicted on international kidnapping charges, but federal agents have been unable to locate her or the now 10-year-old little girl. Not surprisingly, this rabid dog Fisher argued in favor of Miller's, quote, God-given responsibility to kidnap her daughter. He said, in my judgment, the mom had no choice. Moms have a sacred, solemn duty, a responsibility to God, to look out for the welfare of their kids, end quote, which has nothing to do with the fact that Brian Fisher is advocating kidnapping of children, which is a felony just about every place in the goddamn universe. But he's advocating it. Now, who's going to pull support from his radio program? Who is going to stand up on their hind legs and identify this rabid son of a bitch as the sick beast that he is? Kidnap children away from their parents if one or both of the parents happen to be gay. But this guy has a platform a hell of a lot bigger than mine where he can spew this hate and this encouragement to commit felonies all over the country. And who cares about this? Does mainstream media report on this? Is there another talk show that reports on this sick, rabid bastard? A man advocating felonies against children. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, GLAAD, have been among those to condemn Fisher's remarks. Quote, he is quite literally comparing his desire to take children from homes with same-sex parents to the heroic events that led to the freeing of slaves, the Underground Railroad. He is suggesting that ripping children out of LGBT-headed households is the noble cause of our day. This is one sick, evil, degenerate, criminal son of a bitch, Brian Fisher. Like bees,
the siren of the the deadpan of the cops, chalk to mark the outline where the boy first dropped. Beware the Holy Trinity, church.
For every death the virus gets more deadly than before.
Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. I've talked about this many times, but I know that so much of the social discord and hate and uneasy feeling that just flows across this country for brought about by many reasons, unemployment, a disrespect for people with whom the right disagrees with, the name calling, has as its genesis and its perpetration the right wing in this country. Somebody listening may say, "Well, you do the same thing, Malloy." Yeah, I do. In reaction to what I have witnessed for 27 years in broadcast. And the thing that is sickening to me is how the universe for liberals or progressives keeps getting smaller and smaller. When you have someone, for example, like Bob Kincaid, who has to operate his program the way he does, Kincaid should have a platform, a radio station, a 50,000-watt station that would broadcast all throughout Appalachia because of the message he puts out. I'm not saying that Kincaid is a one-issue talk show host. He's not. But he focuses on that issue to the extent that the millions of people who live in Appalachia should have a chance to hear it. But he will never get that opportunity. Never. As far as me, I have watched the universe that I operate in shrink smaller and smaller. I have watched other so-called left talk show hosts be marginalized with programs from midnight to 3 a.m. or only on the weekends or only on stations in markets where the power is the same as a light bulb. And I've said it before, this is not the result of the marketplace speaking. Any right winger who tells you that is a goddamn liar. This is the result of how radio programming degenerated after Bill Clinton signed the Consolidation Act back in the mid-90s. Once that happened, Clinton was the one who put the death knell, or rang the death knell, for liberal talk in this country. It was two people who destroyed things. Reagan, with the end of the Fairness Doctrine, and Clinton with the Consolidation Act. But the reason I'm talking about this is because I think about this Brian Fisher and all these right-wingers who have no problem. It doesn't make any difference if they have advertisers or not, because they have extremely wealthy right-wing billionaires who will fund them no matter what. Who do you really think that Premier Radio Network is the one that provides the money for Glenn Beck? Don't fool yourself. An advertising dollar is an advertising dollar. When you have six hard right neo-Nazi talk show hosts in this country who between the six of them probably make about $100 million a year on AM radio, you're talking about an amount of money that simply is not being generated by radio advertising right now anywhere. So where does the funding come to keep this hate and this sickness blanketing this country? Where does it come from? Well, it comes from the same sources that went into action after Barry Goldwater had his ass handed to him in 1964. That's when it was decided, the right wing decided, well, we can't allow the marketplace to work. Because if we do that, then we are going to be marginalized. People in this country are not fascist. We just fought fascism. That was the feeling. It was 20 years prior. But the United States had defeated fascism. And the right wing in this country has always been fascist. So what to do? What to do? How to get the message of fascism, American style, out to the hundreds of millions of people or the tens of millions of people who are open to becoming fascists in this country? How do you get it out? Well, you do what the right wing did with the think tanks and the billionaires and the millionaires. And if there's trouble getting somebody on the air, you give the program away, which is how Limbaugh got started. One day he's on one station, the next day he's on 80. Because he was so popular? No, because Roger Ailes said, hey, I got a free program for you. Won't cost you a dime. All you have to do is give me 4 minutes an hour, and it's yours. But nobody on the left, no liberal, ever, in modern broadcasting, has come up with the same idea and said to a Peter Werbe or a Bob Kincaid or a Mike Malloy or a Peter B. Collins or whoever among us is still left standing and said, look, it doesn't make any difference what it's going to cost. Your message is important, so we're going to fund you. If the advertisers want to bail out, let them bail out. It won't matter. How do you think Limbaugh stays on the air, for Christ's sake, with something like 200 of his advertisers fleeing? Well, this is prelude to a later story. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Mike Molloy.
Yeah, with every breath I take, really. Let me go back to this sick son of a bitch, Brian Fisher, with the American Family Association. His statement, you know, in his AIDS denial rhetoric, that there is no such thing as HIV virus that causes AIDS. And his reason for it, the reason for his sick, degenerate way of thinking, he says that it isn't possible for a virus to remain dormant for a long period of time. You know, I hope this son of a bitch had chicken pox when he was a child. I hope he had chicken pox when he was 6 years old, 7 years old. Good chance he probably did. So that when he's around 68 or 70 or 75 and he develops shingles and suffers the tortures at the damned, he can go back and think about his statement that a virus doesn't remain dormant for long periods of time. And I hope someday he's takes a suck off a paper cup that he probably shouldn't have been sucking off of and develops herpes. I mean, see, this is, do I really wish this misfortune to befall him? Hell yes. This is the thing that is so sickening about these right-wingers, especially the Christian right-wingers. Science doesn't exist. Science is what they say it is. And they have millions of followers, just like the sorry bastard Glenn Beck does, who will believe anything because they have that fascist mindset. They want to be led by a dictator. They desire a Hitler. They desire somebody to beat them into shape. They want the priest on the one side and the fascist leader on the other. And they want to be kicked and stomped. They don't ever want to have an original thought because it is too tiring. They want a handbook handed to them about the best way to raise their child. Frighten your child with a fear of eternal damnation. and frighten your child with constant beatings to get the little bugger to act the way he's supposed to, according to the Hitler Youth Handbook. This is what these people do. Why does this go on? Why does this happen? Why do people listen to someone that says a virus can't lie dormant for a long period of time? How many times in the past 6 months have you gone by a Walgreens drugstore where they have a sign out front, shingles virus, flu vaccine, shingles vaccine, flu vaccine, just come on inside. Now, I don't care what your views are on vaccinations. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about what this sick son of a bitch insists on telling his brain-dead Christian goose-stepping audience. In order to back up, just like Mitt Romney, in order to back up Romney's incompetency, he makes statements that Barack Obama's Health and Human Services just issued a directive to gut the work requirements in the Welfare Reform Act of 1996. These are all lies. This is what these people do. This is why I think they have to be stopped. They have to be taken off the air. They have to be denied the right to speak this kind of terrorism. There is no unequivocal right to free speech in this country. That's been tested in court over and over and over again. You cannot say things that have a certain outcome as a result of your saying them and say, well, I have my free speech rights. That's insanity. You can't walk up to somebody pushing a baby carriage and say, I'm going to kill your baby, and expect that that parent or the person pushing the baby carriage is going to say, oh, okay, well, that's your free speech right. So when you see these commercials on television, I'm sure you've seen, not commercials, but PSAs, I guess. Maybe they're run by some pharmaceutical company. I don't know. But, you know, you see a person, when you look at them, they think, well, late 60s, early 70s. And the person says, you know, it was the worst pain I've ever experienced. And I went to my doctor, and my doctor said, did you have chicken pox when you were a child? And I answered, yeah, I did. And the doctor said, then the virus has stayed inside of you all these years. And now it's back. Only it's not chicken pox now. It's shingles. But according to this filthy, rancid pig, Brian Fisher, that can't happen. Wow. Do you remember when the Department of Homeland Security... When was it? In 2009, not long after Obama took office, there was this Department of Homeland Security report that warned about the growing threat of right-wing terrorism in this country. Do you remember that? And as soon as he said that, every conservative pig in America that had access to a microphone or a camera just went after this guy. Daryl Johnson was his name, is his name. They went after him and his report. The right wing, like Nazis of any era, like fascists of any era, the right wing cannot deal with the truth. Their sole method of communication to the masses is the big lie. Because they can control the lie. They cannot control the truth. So it must be lies. Well, Daryl Johnson, who left Department of Homeland Security 2 years ago to form his own consulting company, according to the Huffington Post, he he said the attack on the Sikh temple in Wisconsin last weekend didn't surprise him because what he calls politics and personalities stymie investigators from targeting militants who don't happen to be Islamic. Now, when he says politics and personalities, he's talking about right-wing members of Congress and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Ann Coulter and the rest of these filthy, disgusting pigs who continue to commit terror in this country. That's who he was talking about. And he said the other day, he said yesterday, I'm not surprised. He said, there are certain people in charge who made a decision, and they stuck by that decision, and that was to remove his report after pressure from the right-wing killers in this country, like Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. These people are murderers. Did they hold the weapon? No, of course not. But if I'm the driver of a car and my pal goes in and robs a 7-Eleven and shoots the clerk dead, I'm going to be charged with murder. That's what these people do. They are drive-by accomplices to murder all over the country. Beck, Limbaugh, Hannity, Coulter, Bortz, all of them. This is what they do. This is what they are paid $10, $15, $20 million a year to do. Advertiser, schmadvertiser. They don't give a goddamn about advertisers. They don't need them. They're well-funded and well-financed. So the guy, Daryl Johnson, who wrote the report, said, the decision to pull that report, the decision to knuckle under to the right-wing terrorists on Fox, the right-wing terrorists on the Beck Show, that decision, quote, has come at a cost, and that's the bottom line. Lives have been lost. Attacks continue to happen, end quote. Johnson told the Huffington Post in an interview, quote, hindsight is always 20/20. But if Department of Homeland Security had a domestic terrorism unit today, we would definitely have sent out a warning, a threat assessment to Muslim Americans being attacked. I know this was a Sikh temple, but he mistook them for Muslims. End quote. And despite repeated reports of arson and other violences against mosques, Johnson said, quote, not a single intelligence report has warned these communities about the right-wing terrorists who operate in this country along with Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Ann Coulter, and the rest of these filthy goddamn traitors who should be rounded up and taken out of the country and dumped someplace. They are poisoning and have been poisoning everything in the country. I cannot walk up to you and say, I'm going to rape your children. I don't have that kind of free speech. I cannot say to you that we should invade all areas of where there are Muslims and kill them. That's not free speech. That is terrorism. And that's what every single one of these right-wingers do every single day on the air, 24/7, as long as they're on the air. But now, the report had to be removed because the murderers, like Beck, demanded it be removed. Before the hour, uh, This is from Tim. It's a letter to Jeebus. Dear Jeebus, remember that virus you created called HIV, the virus which causes AIDS? Well, apparently your son Brian Fisher is saying that it doesn't exist. In other words, my Lord and Savior, he's saying you don't have the power to create HIV, which mutates to AIDS. Mr. Skyspook, can you please give Brian Fisher the HIV virus and let him get the AIDS virus too? If you give Brian Fisher the HIV and AIDS virus, I promise you, Mr. Cloudbing, that I will go to church, give 10%, and worship you forever. I love you, Jeebus, and I will give you my life. If you do as I say, amen. God. All right. And from Jill in Virginia. Now, I want you to listen to this closely. Mike, here's what might happen if Romney gets elected. He could ignore the looming crisis of climate change, signing permits for more drilling, and passing up the opportunity to lead the world to a treaty agreement to reduce CO2 emissions. He could start another war in Africa or Asia. Even after the warning to the world that Fukushima was vulnerable, he could allow nuclear power plants to continue to operate in this country, endangering us all. And even allow new nuclear plants to be built. He could sign a law allowing American citizens to be detained without charge. He might pass up the opportunity to prosecute war criminals, and he might pass up the opportunity to prosecute or even stop bankers who foreclose illegally on homeowners. He could push through Congress a health care law that feeds the monster the health insurance companies have become and ensure that every dollar spent on health care includes a substantial cut to these companies. I'll vote for Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate. Friends tell me this means throwing my vote away. But voting for a major party candidate means either voting for someone who could do all the things I've listed or voting for someone who already has. Jill in Virginia. Yeah. Now, just a little bit more on Daryl Johnson, who left Department of Homeland Security 2 years ago to after the report he put together. He was a security analyst, and he took a look at the security needs in this country, and he came to a conclusion that should be obvious to anyone who is not a right-winger, and that is the greatest threat to terrorism in this country is domestically. It's from the right-wingers. It's from the terrorists who dominate the airwaves. It's from co-conspirators in open murder like Beck, Hannity, Limbaugh, Bortz, Coulter, the rest of these slime. And because he tried to warn in a report that said, look, this is what we should be focusing on. The right wing, every person I just mentioned, plus every little third-rate and fourth-rate and tenth-rate right-winger who had access to a keyboard and a computer or some toy radio program, all of them went after Daryl Johnson to the point that he had to resign. This is how it works. This is how fascism works. If you speak the truth, you will be targeted. If you are targeted, your universe will get smaller and smaller until the time comes, if you're a bureaucrat, where you say, okay, I'm out of here. Or the administration that hired you will say, say you want to spend more time with your family, but you got to go, pal. He said the other day, or today, in an interview with Huffington Post, quote, I hate to be right under these circumstances, referring to the slaughter at the Sikh temple. I hate to be right under these circumstances. And he had warned in that 2009 report about this threat of right-wing extremists. He said in the report that they would be motivated to become violent by the election of the first black U.S. president. and an ailing economy. He also said right-wing extremist groups viewed military veterans as lucrative recruits. Hence, the guy who committed the crime at the Sikh temple. And by the way, the latest on that is he committed suicide. Stinking, filthy, neo-Nazi, skinhead, rat commits suicide. Coward. His act was cowardly when he goes into a place of worship and opens fire, and his act was cowardly because he didn't have the nerve, as none of these bastards do, to face up to the consequences of what he did. Pummeled from the right. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano withdrew Johnson's report and slashed the number of analysts devoted to domestic non-Islamic terrorism. Today, Daryl Johnson said, just one DHS analyst is assigned full-time to track neo-Nazis like this page filth, as well as violent anti-abortion activists and militant anti-environmental groups. We'll be back after the break. Getting back to this interview at Huffington Post with Daryl Johnson, who left Department of Homeland Security after that department felt compelled to take down a report that Daryl Johnson had put together about domestic terrorism. The reason they felt compelled, I don't know what the inner workings were inside Janet Napolitano's mind, or whomever ordered her to order the report taken down that listed the most serious threat to safety and security in this country is domestic terrorism. It's not from outside the country. It's inside the country. And the right wing went nuts when the report was put out there, nuttier than it already is. And after a lot of pressure, of course, it was taken down. Johnson has a book coming out in September entitled Right Wing Resurgence, How a Domestic Terror Threat is Being Ignored. Johnson told the Huffington Post, "This just baffles my mind. Why hasn't Department of Homeland Security increased its capabilities to analyze and assess these groups?" By these groups, he means the right-wing terror organizations, the neo-Nazis, the skinheads, the white power freaks, the ones who are committing the violence and the murder and the mayhem, the ones who are inspired by people like Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Ann Coulter, Neil Bortz, and the rest of these right-wing poisonous snakes. Peter King, the Republican of New York, chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, has held a series, and we've talked about this, of disgusting hearings on Muslim radicalization, including inside the military. But as Daryl Johnson points out to Huffington Post, no one on Capitol Hill has given equal time to right-wing extremism. There have been no hearings on that. Why do you suppose that is? The guy who shot Gabby Giffords, the nutcase who went into the theater, the guy that went into the Sikh temple, the guy that went into a church to blow away a doctor who performed abortions, the ones that destroy Jewish synagogues, house in this country. Why is no attention paid to that? Why do you suppose? Think about it. Why? What do you come up with? Johnson said, quote, "Why haven't we had any hearings on the white supremacist threat? I think it boils down to the fact that our legislators are basically biased in what they think the threat is. I think they need to be more equitable," end quote. Biased my ass. It has nothing to do, Mr. Johnson, with bias. It has to do with threats and intimidation from people like Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh, because they are so powerful. They can go on the air. They can hold a rally and say, candidate so-and-so wants to shut down your freedom of expression. Vote for the teabagger. And these members of Congress know it. That's how bad it's become. Do people like Hannity and Beck and Bortz and Limbaugh have at their disposal political power? You're goddamn right they do. And they've worked hard for it. And the advertisers that have backed them over the years and the financial assistance they've gotten over the years have made sure that they're all millionaires. They're all under the control of the fascist right in this country, and they will say and do anything that they are told to do and laugh at it, revel in it. They will attack a college student and call her a slut and a whore because she advocates for birth control to be included in insurance policies. This is what they do. Before Sunday shootings at the Sikh temple, right-wing terrorists had killed at least 9 people in 8 attacks, according to the New America Foundation, since 9/11. Peter Bergen, who co-authored the foundation's study on homegrown terrorism, noted that toll appears likely to rise to 15, given Wade Michael Page's white supremacist ties. Huffington Post's request for comment from Department of Homeland Security was not returned. But the Department of Homeland Security officials have denied Johnson's depiction of a department asleep at the wheel when it comes to violent extremists who don't fit the Al-Qaeda mode. Why not put some drones on these right-wing sons of bitches in this country, Mr. Obama? Johnson said denial is bipartisan, with Republicans in Congress and Democrats in the White House failing to take right-wing extremism as seriously as they take Islamic militancy. Johnson said of the federal government's attitude, quote, "The best word that could describe it is probably defiant, resolute. There's pretty much a, we made a decision, we're sticking with that decision no matter what happens, because if we reverse position, we'll look worse," attitude. Where concerns investigating right-wing terror in this country, inspired by and therefore co-conspired by the likes of these right-wing talk show hosts, whether they are secular or religious, it makes no difference. Brian Fisher will tell you that there's no such thing as a dormant virus. That AIDS is a result of, you know, recreational drug use. Limbaugh will sit there for 20 years and tell you there's no such thing as global warming. Hannity will sit there and say anything the right wing sticks into his goddamn mouth, he'll spit it out. That's what he is supposed to do. Beck is a paranoid schizophrenic who will do anything to get people to kill each other because he loves it. He wants to see it. I want to see it. I want to see blood in the street. No, you don't think? Of course, it goes without really having to mention that Tim McVeigh and his group I wonder, and I do, I mean, I really do, I just wonder how much more of this society can stand and retain its identity as a still, for the most part, coherent society. I really do. I wonder how many more of these mass killings, and they are going to come. They're going to come now, I think, with more regularity because it's being ordered in the between the lines comments of these right wing commentators. The dog whistle garbage that these thugs put out there for their audiences to hear. Especially after Obama gets reelected. And whether I want him to be or not is beside the point. He will be reelected. Then what? Greg Palast is absolutely correct.
The Flying Monkey Right. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Something interesting. Letter from a gay son to his Romney-supporting dad. And it's all over the web. You can find it on several websites, but I want to share this with you. And it's titled, My Dad Was Going to Vote for Romney Until I Wrote Him This Letter. Dad, saw your recent post on Facebook liking Mitt Romney and had to write. Admittedly, I'm still getting used to my 66-year-old father using Facebook, but given what I'm about to write, I assure you I'm quite supportive of it. Though your public support for Romney doesn't surprise me, given how open you've been about your dislike of President Obama, it does bother me. Since coming out to you and Mom 19 years ago, I've watched you vote for the Republican candidates in every major race. Save for the occasional mealtime argument or sarcastic Fox News barb, I've held my tongue, despite the hurt and anger that came from watching you vote for a party that has made sport out of demonizing gay and lesbian people, like me, for political gain. I did so because I never had a solid enough argument that the Democratic Party was wholly different. They often stop short of institutionalizing discrimination of gays, but were sadly lax on standing on principle and advocating for its eradication, until now. For the first time in our nation's history, a U.S. president and his party have publicly stated that gays and lesbians are equal citizens and should be such under the law. I know you're aware that Obama believes gays and lesbians like me should have the rights and responsibilities of marriage, and that the 2012 Democratic Party platform will include marriage equality as one of its tenets. You will never know what it is to be gay in this world at this moment, but I bet at some point in your life you've known how it felt to have your essential worth validated by someone with authority. I can't overstate the power of having my president and his party say to me and the nation that I am not less than, but equal to, and validate my inherent right to pursue my life with liberty and unimpeded happiness. Never before has this happened. So never before have I made the argument that you should vote for the Democrat. But today's a new day. 4 months ago, I sat at my younger brother's wedding and watched you well up, speaking publicly with pride for the man he's become and the woman he chose. His life, though certain to have unexpected turns ahead, has a clear path, one available to him simply because of his sexual orientation at birth. Mine has never been so clear. Oftentimes, being gay feels like being a salmon swimming upstream. Our relationships aren't supported by tradition or institution. Any models we may have remain hidden as openness invites derision, and the pressures to carve a life out with another person minimally is equally affected by the ever-present fear instilled in us from our earliest memories that we're different and unlovable and bad can often be too much to bear. And yet, not always. The resiliency of my community in the face of such misunderstanding and hate is astonishing and inspiring. They've taught me to think twice before underestimating the will of the human spirit in its slow march toward progress, whatever the circumstances. I'm almost 40. Both of my younger brothers are married, enjoying all the rights and responsibilities of that government-issued status. Do you want that for me? Do you believe I should have someone besides me on life's journey, legally recognized as my spouse, able to visit me in the hospital, able to make my end-of-life decisions, with whom I'm able to build a financially interdependent life? I have to believe you do. I have to believe you're too good a man not to. Because if you don't, if, like the candidate you're supporting, you believe marriage should only be between one man and one woman, I feel sorry for us both. You, because it means you're on the wrong side of history and your own son's happiness, and me, because it means my father does believe I'm less than. In any other election, given any other choice, I'd stay quiet. If you and others like you wanted to believe the worst about Obama, a good man trying to do good work, and vote against your interests, I'd shake my head and wonder and watch you do it anyway. But this isn't any other election. This election presents a clear choice between two people whose policy beliefs directly affect the course of my life. Let me be clear. A vote for Mitt Romney is a vote against me. There's no argument to counter that fact. You might want to argue that you're not a single-issue voter, but when the single issue is your own son's equality under the law, I wouldn't recommend that argument. You might want to argue that because you live in New York State, your vote won't ultimately matter since Obama will carry the state anyway. You're correct. He will. And that way, I suppose, your vote won't matter. But it matters to me. You might want to argue that because you don't like the idea of your son telling you what you ought to do. But whatever else, you know I'm a good man. It's been said, all that's necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. And I'm a good man who's never been good at that. Will I change your mind? I hope so. I'm sure Mom would tell me it's a lost cause, and maybe she's right. But that would be sad, because it might be nice to one day have my father stand up at my wedding, realizing he helped make it happen. Signed, your son. By the way, subsequent information on the net say that the father did change his mind and decide to vote for Obama. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Time away from the weekend.
America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Now, that letter from an almost 40-year-old man to his father, asking his father not to vote for Mitt Romney, contrast it with this much shorter one. This is posted at Reddit, among other sites. James, this is a difficult but necessary letter to write. I hope your telephone call was not to receive my blessing for the degrading of your lifestyle. I have fond memories of our time together, but that is all in the past. Don't expect any further conversations with me. No communications at all. I will not come to visit, nor do I want you in my house. You've made your choice, though wrong. You've made your choice, though wrong. I can't read this last one. God did not intend for this unnatural lifestyle. If you choose not to attend my funeral, my friends and family will understand. Have a good birthday and a good life. No present exchanges will be accepted. Goodbye, Dad. How about that? And that, of course, is because James came out to his parents. That's the other thing that just drives me insane is the depth and the degree of ugliness that people, including family members, can gin up because somebody's sexual orientation is not of the hetero mode. What is that about? I've never been able to understand that. I mean, I can understand why teenage boys can be virulently anti-gay against older, I said I could understand it, not condone it, against older gay men. It's because their own sexuality is still in a developing stage and they have homosexual feelings. Everybody does. You can't be raised even partly in a normal way without at some point, whether you're man or woman, boy or girl, having sexual feelings for your same sex. I mean, the first sexual object for a growing up little girl is her father. The first sexual object for a growing up little boy is his mother. So what do? Condemn the children for having incestuous feelings? What is wrong in this country? And because someone's orientation, where it concerns attraction and love and wanting to share life with and have sex with and be with, that orientation is toward the same gender, why does that make some people just goddamn insane other than teenage boys? I listen to these people that appear to be adults, especially the white males. I know there's some black males that do this too. But see, that's one of the best kept secrets in the black community, is living on the down low because you happen to be gay. So most of my experience in listening to these homophobes has been from white people white men who are usually somehow connected to either this perversion called evangelical Christianity or this medievalism called Islam. I don't hear that many rabbis or Jews railing on about gays. I understand that it's seen as an abomination in the Orthodox communities. I get that, but you know, these are all three are Abrahamic religions, so of course all three of them are going to share some of the same creation myths, the same hatred, the same bigotry, the same insanity, the same the satanic way of looking at life. But I've never been able to figure that one out, other than a couple of references in the Old Testament. And then you have, I mean, you have, if you're a Christian or a Muslim, you have this historic Jesus wandering around the Middle East with 12 other men. And, I mean, please. And nobody mentions the probability that two or three, or maybe all of them, were gay. It's not, oh, well, you can't say that. Oh, my God. We're going to kick you off our radio station. Why can't that be discussed? I mean, the sexuality of the historic Jesus is off limits. Much less the homosexual possibility. Just sexuality in general. Oh, no! No, 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 no! Jesus didn't do that! But the attitude of evangelical Christians about gay people and the smarmy, hypocritical condescension that they come up with, well, you know, hate the sin but love the sinner. We don't, you know, just like this chicken bastard has made it very clear, this Kathy family. Oh, no, we don't hate gay people. We love everybody. We just, we just don't believe that gay folks should get married because that's not what God said. Where does that come from? What is it that is so threatening about same-sex sexual orientation that drives people over the edge? What is it? I mean, even people who are not necessarily made sick by their religion, you will still find people who, for no apparent rational reason, are homophobic. I don't understand that. When how many families in America do not have, either in the nuclear family or the extended family, one, two, or more folks who happen to be oriented toward the same sex? How many families? A lot of them just have to keep it quiet. Some of them become Catholic priests so they can hang out with the rest of the boys in the seminary. And then when that's not satisfying enough, they decide, well, I know, I'll be a pedophile. What is it? What is it about sexual orientation that, if it's not focused on someone of the other sex, if it's focused on someone of the same sex, that makes it so threatening? Have any of you homophobes ever knowingly hung out with someone who is gay? You know, the guy at the bowling alley that you think is just one hell of a dude. Hey, you know, I've known old Frank over there for about 10 years. I don't know why I never got married. I guess he likes batching it. But goddamn, we get drunk together and we go hunting together and he kills stuff. And oh, man, you ought to see him dress a deer. What are you going to do when you find out that old Frank is gay as a... gay as a blade. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to freak? Are you afraid he's going to come over and put his hand on your ass and say, hey, listen, we've killed enough deer. How about we, you know, do something a little more fun? I mean, what are you going to do? Remember that movie, Brokeback Mountain? Do you realize how many heterosexual men went to that and just sat there and went, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Only they were oh my god-ing because, oh my God. I mean, who is the guy? Heath Ledger. He is cute. Oh, he's dead now, but he sure was cute, isn't he? Oh my God. Wait a minute. What's going on here? Wait. Sitting there in the dark with your box of popcorn, huh? Did they just kiss? I can't quit you. Was that the line? I wish I could quit you. Brokeback Mountain. We never saw that one, did we?
I saw it.
I wouldn't go? You saw it and I wouldn't go? Why didn't I go? I was worried. No. I've had my little flings, honey. Ooh, trust me on that. Long time ago. I got that chapter of my life straight pretty early on. Here, try this, Mike. No thanks. Well, you used to watch Queer as Folk too, and I you love that show. I just got over it after the first, 20 episodes. Just like, oh no. But that's how we got to know. The guy that Molly wants to marry. Yeah, Hal Sparks, right? Molly wants to grow up and marry Hal Sparks. We'll be right back. Before the hour, we're going to open the lines for the third hour tonight. The number's 877-996-2556 if you want to call during the commercial break here in a couple of minutes. Forecasters and climatologists are predicting, revamping their predictions, there you go, about the 2012 hurricane season. This is also from Huffington Post today. Forecasters are saying that warmer than normal sea temperatures and wind patterns that favor storm formation mean chances are higher for an above normal season. However, there's always a however, that is tempered with the expected development of an El Nino weather pattern over the Pacific that may suppress storms later in the season. Now, if you've been keeping score, you know that so far we've had 4 tropical storms and 2 hurricanes. 12 to 17 tropical storms were expected, with as many as 5 to 8 hurricanes, forecasters said. Last year was one of the busiest seasons on record, with 19 named systems, including Irene, one of the costliest storms in U.S. history. You don't remember that, do you? You remember Irene? Have you been following what is happening in the Philippines? The city of Manila, that, like the city of New Orleans, sits at a very unfortunate geographical location. Manila, I don't know what the report is today, but most of Manila, a city of, 10, 12 million, has been pretty much underwater because of these incredibly intense monsoon rains. Just a little more of the consequences of our refusal to believe 30 years ago that we had to do something about the crap we were dumping into the atmosphere. Oh, and I was going to get to this last night, but we had the storm-related problems last night. Irish citizens are abandoning religion, Irish, faster than residents of every country in the world except communist Vietnam. That's a new study reveals. Since 2005, the percentage of people in Ireland who describe themselves as a religious person has declined from 69% to 47%. Some have suggested that the study could reflect attitudes changed by the numerous sex abuse scandals rocking established religion in the predominantly Roman Catholic country. You know, there was a time in Ireland where the Roman Catholic Church pretty much ran, and it was recent, pretty much ran the government of Ireland. The Archbishop of Dublin told the Belfast Telegraph, quote, "The Catholic Church, on its part, cannot simply presume that the faith will automatically be passed from one generation to the next or be lived to the full by its own members." Which is an oblique way of saying, yeah, we're a bunch of child rapists. Yeah, and I guess the Irish people have made a decision that they don't want us anymore. Aye, it's true, you know. Last year, Ireland's Prime Minister, Enda Kenny, blasted the Vatican in a speech arguing that, quote, the rape and torture of children were downplayed in favor of upholding the primacy of the institution, its power, its standing, and its reputation, end quote. The United States was also included on the poll's top 10 list of countries experiencing notable declines in religiosity. Vietnam ranked first, Ireland second, Switzerland third. The United States clocked in at 8th, with a drop from 73% in 2005 to 60% in 2012 of people claiming to be religious. Oh, let us pray that that's true. Indeed, let us pray. Keep going down, numbers! This had to do with something I touched on a couple of weeks ago about atheism is growing by leaps and bounds around the planet. And who would question the fact that that is the only rational response to the insanity of all these religions, every single one of them? Atheism or at least agnosticism. To just get away from this corruption and this blood and murder and bigotry and hatred and especially the three Abrahamic religions, all of which would do anything to destroy the other two. They have subtle ways of doing it, some. Some have a more direct way, but my God, they're all the religions of Abraham, and every single one of them would destroy the other one given half a chance, and you know that's true. You know it's true.
Oh, but Mike, that's just the wonders of God.
No, it's not. It's the actions of people who are totally schizophrenic and insane. In total, 59, this is the problem. See, 59% of the world still say that they think of themselves as religious. 23% said they were not religious, and 13% said they were convinced atheists. So we only have 13% of the global population, but when you get right down to it, that's a pretty big group. And we're going to continue to proselytize and try to set you free. We really are. 7 past the hour. Welcome back. This is the Malloy program. I'm sure if you're of a certain age, you are aware of this. It isn't really talked about in the high school textbooks regarding recent American history. But if you're of a certain age, you know that during the decade of war in Indochina, the United States sprayed about 20 million gallons of Agent Orange and other herbicides in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. This was done to deny cover to the freedom fighters in that country who were sick of the Chinese, were sick of the French, and were sick of the United States trying to run their country. When you have a fighting force like that, and you are the invader, you will be defeated. Unless you're willing to use nuclear weapons and kill everything. What the policymakers in the United States did through 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 4 different presidencies, because remember, Nixon's was cut short. What we decided to do was to poison the country, not with radiation poison, but with chemicals. The spraying of Agent Orange stopped only after scientists commissioned by the Agriculture Department issued a report saying that the major component of Agent Orange, dioxin, which was produced by Dow Chemical, showed, quote, a significant potential to increase birth defects. By the time the spraying stopped, Agent Orange and other herbicides had destroyed about 5.5 million acres of forest and cropland, an area roughly the size of New Jersey. Now, the birth defects and sicknesses and cancers and diseases and death and horror that was visited upon the American servicemen who handled this stuff on the direct orders of their military superiors has been documented, even though the American government up until recently, and I don't know to what extent, but up until recently, the American government denied compensation or assistance to those veterans that handled this poison. Well, finally, 40 years after the United States stopped spraying this in the jungles of Southeast Asia, Da Nang, according to the Times, is one of about 24 former American sites that remain polluted with an especially toxic strain of dioxin. On Thursday, today, after years of rebuffing Vietnamese requests for assistance in a cleanup, the U.S. inaugurated its first major effort to address the environmental effects of the long war. David Scheer, the American ambassador to Vietnam, said at a ceremony attended by senior officers of the Vietnamese military, quote, this morning we celebrate a milestone in our bilateral relationship. We're cleaning up this mess, end quote. The program is expected to cost $43 million and take 4 years. The program was officially welcomed with smiles and handshakes at the ceremony, but bitterness remains in Vietnam. Agent Orange is mentioned often in the news media in that country. Victims are commemorated annually on August 10th, the day in 1961 when American forces first started spraying it in Vietnam. The Vietnamese government objected to Olympic sponsorship this year by Dow Chemical for obvious reasons. A former Vietnamese ambassador to the United States, Ngo Quang Juan, said, quote, it's a big step, but in the eyes of those who suffered the consequences, it's not enough. Agent Orange. Now, the part of the story, aside from the reporting on Agent Orange in an attempt now to not undo the mass murder that we committed in that country and the environmental destruction that we committed in that country, but the part of the story that just totally freaks me out is that memorial in Washington, D.C., that wall with the names of 58,000 Americans who absolutely and utterly died for nothing. They were sent to their deaths by American administration after American administration for absolutely no reason. There was never a time when those soldiers and Marines and sailors and airmen were defending freedom. There was never a time in that war when they were working for justice. They were nothing more, those 58,000 Americans, and this is, I'm sure it's impossible to take for people who who survived the war or who have friends whose names are on that wall, but the sole purpose of those soldiers was to act as pawns in the global conflict between the Soviet Union and the United States. And the fact that those 58,000 Americans left children and grandchildren and spouses and family members meant nothing to William Westmoreland or Lyndon Johnson or Dick Nixon. Nothing. And the 2, 3, 4, who knows, million Indochinese who were destroyed. Nothing. Meant nothing. And when this really was driven home to me, and literally, I remember the night, Kathy remembers the night, I think I was either working for Air America or IE America, and the story came over the one of the news sources that Secretary of Defense Colin Powell had shown up on stage at a theater in Ho Chi Minh City, where he was part of a farcical musical review that was had become some sort of an annual occurrence at the diplomatic corps in Ho Chi Minh City, formerly called Saigon. That the diplomatic corps would perform little skits and dances, and there would be wine and food and a celebration of the independence of Vietnam. And he was either secretary, I think he was still Secretary of Defense, Colin Powell, but I read the story that said he had dressed up in a caricature of a South Sea Islander with coconuts in place of breasts and facial makeup and a phony-ass grass skirt. And he had gotten up on the stage. Colin Powell, the guy who had, as a colonel, done everything he could, or a major, to cover up the My Lai massacre. Son of a bitch. I remember, and Kathy can probably verify this if you need any doubt, I remember having to wait till the next break and getting up while we were in commercials and walking down the hallway. We had a studio in a building in Decatur, Georgia at the time, and throwing up.
Knows you gotta keep one eye open. For voting, you don't believe in war. But what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fear?
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, Michael and Roswell Rhodes, how much you want to bet that the Agent Orange cleanups are a precondition to the U.S. establishing new bases in Vietnam, or that we're cleaning up the bases that we intend to re-inhabit? Rumsfeld was talking about bilateral defense agreements with Vietnam years ago. At the time, people thought he must have been on acid, but the determination to keep the Cold War going by further threatening and militarily constraining China is now a policy fact. Example, U.S. Marines now in Northern Australia. For decades now, nothing is as it appears on the surface. I doubt seriously this is simple reparation without conditions. Yeah, good point. Absolutely. One last thing here. Nguyen Van Rin, a retired lieutenant general who is now the chairman of the Vietnam Association for Victims of Agent Orange Dioxin, has vivid memories of hearing American aircraft above the jungles of southern Vietnam and seeing Agent Orange raining down in sheets on him and his troops. Plants and animals exposed to the defoliant were dead within days. Many of his troops later suffered illnesses that he suspects were linked to the repeated exposure to Agent Orange, used in concentrations 20 to 55 times that of normal agricultural use. In his office, where a large bust of Ho Chi Minh stared down from a shelf behind his desk, Mr. Rin said, quote, I would like to have one message sent to the American people. The plight of Agent Orange victims continues. I think the relationship would rise up to new heights if the American government took responsibility and helped their victims and addressed the consequences. Well, you'd think that, wouldn't you, Mr. Wren? I mean, I guess you would. But I feel, you know, I've always felt so much sadness for Vietnam veterans, not Vietnam-era veterans, but actual veterans who were in Vietnam for the most grotesquely twisted lies, and who somehow survived physically, but came back with addictions and alcoholism and mental illnesses and suffering beyond belief. That generation, believe it or not, that Vietnam War generation is in its 60s now. Can you believe that? Some of them are in their 70s. But I always felt so much sadness for those soldiers that they had been forced, with the use of the draft, to go halfway around the world to be killed, maimed, physically or emotionally or psychologically maimed, to participate in genocide, to commit destruction that was just almost unspeakable. It ranked right up there with the atrocities committed in any kind of war. And it doesn't make any difference who did it. Germans, Japanese, Italians, Russians, Americans. War is what it is. And to have read the reports back in the late 70s that My Lai-type incidents were so common that there was no need to report them. Everybody knew, so why upset the folks back home? But I never saw any Vietnamese veteran, American Vietnam War veteran, I should say, conduct himself, and it's always been a man, with any sense of pride in what he'd been involved in. I'm not saying he walked around in shame, but I've never known a Vietnam, the actual Vietnam in-country veteran, who would be willing to, figuratively speaking now, pound his chest or pat himself on the back and talk about what a great job they had done. When I was a kid growing up or a teenager or whatever, I do remember World War II veterans who were able to say that. But most veterans that I've known of the Vietnam atrocity were men who were broken, sad, disillusioned, but eventually accepting.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, Marvin is in Sarasota, Florida, listening online. Hello, Marvin.
Hello. Mike?
Yes.
Do you think that shenanigans will go on during this election and Romney and his ilk will steal it from Obama, or do you think Obama will just get beat because there's so many liberals and people that had so much faith in him that are so disappointed in him because he's capitulated on almost everything, and some kind of call this race, I'd like your opinion, as Obama being the snake in the grass and Romney being the weasel. And it's a match between a weasel and a snake, and they're both corporate.
Well, yeah, I haven't heard you say anything I disagree with yet, Marvin. There will be a mighty effort to steal this election and give it to Romney. God forbid if it winds up in the courts, because then it will go to Romney. But I'm sure that every single proprietary voting machine code is being altered even as we speak to give a certain percentage of the votes away from Obama and toward Romney. I don't doubt that in the least. So if the people who are fed up with the policies of Barack Obama decide that they just simply cannot be fooled again and are willing to roll the dice, let fascism take over, and then get involved in real struggle to take our country back. If those people don't vote, then it's probably a fait accompli that Romney is going to be the pretend president in the same manner that George W. Bush was the pretend president. So,
and Reagan, too.
Well, Reagan, I think Reagan won fairly and squarely, I think. I mean, but who knows? It was back in 1979, or, you know, so.
But he was still an actor and a pretender.
Well, yeah.
He was sleeping when the real rodents behind the scenes were running.
I don't disagree with that at all. But you know, Reagan had his own right-wing agenda. He was a right-winger as soon as it was found out that when he was a Democrat, he was a spy for the FBI and the Screen Actors Guild. And
yeah, against his own union brothers and sisters. Can you believe that?
Well, yeah.
Oh.
And then, when he became a Republican then, I mean, he had a long history as governor of California and presidential candidate of being an absolute right-winger. Mitt Romney doesn't have that history. Mitt Romney is a dumbass who's an opportunist. Mitt Romney would say anything or be anything if he thought that it would help him, because, you know, it's his turn, as his wife said. It's their turn to be president. So
you know what the degree boys call a guy like him?
What?
A belly boy.
A belly boy?
Yeah, he earns his degrees on his belly.
Okay, I'd never heard that one.
Haven't you ever met a dumbass and you wondered how they got so high up? In society,
all the
and
time.
It wasn't their parents.
All the
time. You know,
they're called belly boys. I'll remember that one. I don't think I ever heard of that one. I don't think I ever want to hear it again either. I mean, that's pretty creepy, Marvin. That conjures up all sorts of images for me. But to answer your question, oh yeah, there's going to be a mighty effort to suppress. It's going on. It has been going on for the past 4 years, 5 years, to suppress the votes of people who the right-wingers presume would vote Democratic. So there's that going on. There is, like I said, even as we speak, there's an altering of these proprietary codes that would determine where the votes go once the button is pushed or the screen is touched on these machines. And I'm sure that the legal teams from the fanatic right, the Christian right, and the political right, the neo-fascists, in other words, I'm sure those legal teams are all set to challenge any and every election or voter who shows up that doesn't look like he or she is a Republican. So it's going to be this November when people decide who's going to be the next president. There's a potential for some real chaos. And you can interpret that word or define that word chaos any way you like. The Marvin, thanks. I got to leave it there. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. Grant is in Tulsa listening on Sirius. Hello, Grant.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
I thought the next thing that Marvin was going to say was something about squeal like a pig there for a second. I wasn't sure.
Well, I wasn't either.
Hey, man. You know, you were talking about the right-wingers and that guy from Homeland Security and stuff earlier.
Yeah.
And as you know, being out here in the trucking world, I listen to that right-wing garbage from my coworkers all day long, every day.
Right.
And they are a threat. And they act like they don't even know that they're a threat. Sometimes they're so dumb.
I know.
You know, they don't even know it's against the law to threaten the life of the president,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. And I hear it every day on my job. And I've even told my mother, you know, there's no doubt in my mind they'd be the ones that march us off. I'm talking about me and you march us off to the trains to go to the gas chambers.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt that they do that to us if they thought they'd get away with it.
Well, you can justify any kind of atrocity you want to when you're doing it in the name of your God.
Isn't that the truth?
It is. It always has been.
That's right.
You know, the burning of women at the stake, the Inquisition, the gas chambers, the crematoria. Anything can be justified in the name of religion, because just go back to the Old Testament. Hell, just go all the way back to Exodus and look at what this bloodthirsty, sick, degenerate God ordered Joshua to do once he crossed the River Jordan, to go in and slaughter the Canaanites. I mean, just butcher them, butcher the women, butcher the children, butcher the pregnant women, rip the fetuses out, smash them, kill them, burn their villages, murder their livestock. What the hell kind of a God is that? So,
I don't know.
It's degenerate, sick, and invented by people who were degenerate and sick. And out of that came these three religions that are also degenerate and sick. And they will kill, they will murder, they will maim to degrees that you and I would just not be able to comprehend in the name of their God or their religion or their religious philosophy. So I don't doubt for a second, not for a second, that with the right impetus, which is what Glenn Beck and Coulter.
Kennedy.
Yeah, right. The rest of these people are pushing for. They figure that they're safe because they take the position. They hide behind their money. They make the claim that they are Christians, that they are God-fearing, that they are conservative, when in fact they are vermin. They are a cancer in this society, and they need to be cut out. They just need to be removed from their positions where they have poisoned this this country without let up. And they probably never will be removed because
they
serve the interests of corporate or capitalist America. They're serving the interests quite well, thank you.
Yeah, that's right. They're entrenched so much, we're never going to be able to get rid of them now. They control everything. They control even our monetary system now.
Yeah.
So,
well, Grant,
all right, man.
Take care. Drive safely, okay?
Hey, thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks for checking in. Thanks for checking in. I don't think anybody with the sense you'll find in a sack of doorknobs could ever, ever doubt. I mean, all you have to do is read, you know, just read history. Could ever doubt that religious fanatics are the worst kind of fanatic. You know, there's no religious equivalent to the Geneva Conventions. I mean, there has not been, that I'm aware of, maybe you know something, where all the religious leaders have sat around and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Now, we can't do this, and we can't do that, and this is in violation of God's law, and that's in violation. I mean, anything goes for these people. Anything. There's no such thing. And there should have been many times Nuremberg trials. Who was put on trial after the various inquisitions by the Catholic Church? Who wound up serving time or being beheaded because of the burning and murder of hundreds of thousands of women across Europe during the Dark Ages? Who was held responsible for the butchery of in the Middle Ages of Jews and Muslims? Who was ever held responsible for that? Nobody. Because it was done in the name of religion. So, it's absolutely true that if the occasion presents itself, religious fascism will just rise up like a monster and devour everything in its path. Mike is in Newport, Oregon, listening on Sirius. Hello, Mike.
Hello, how you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, can.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to kind of get an idea about when Colin Powell did that.
When he did it? It was in, all right, let me think. I think it was in the early, like, 2002... 2003, It was about it was about 10 years ago.
You know, I used to have some respect for that man, but he just keeps evaporating every year.
I hear you.
I'm a Vietnam vet. I served over there in 69 with the Marines in a place called Antwall, and I got dumped on Agent Orange every day for a full year.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got diabetes type 2 now, and you know, it's been a struggle for me for over 25 years. And I'm back. I'm alive. I have family, you know, and fortunately I haven't seen anything major with them. But all of us, I know so many guys, you know, that were screwed up.
Right.
And when they started this crap, Bush and his little war off in Iraq and now in Afghanistan, the way they kept shipping these kids back and forth, I kept saying to myself, this is bullshit. We're doing the same damn thing all over again.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, listen, be careful of your language. We're not only on Sirius, we're also on the radio. So you just got to watch your language there, okay? I mean, I'm in total agreement with you about what you're talking about, and I'm also in total agreement that there shouldn't be any restrictions on volatile language, but there are certain words that we just can't use, and the one you just said is one of them. So just dial it back just a tad, all right? Because I want to hear what you got to say, all right?
That's what I had to say, essentially.
Okay.
With Bush and company, when this started with Iraq, I knew it was a mistake. I told family and friends, this is the same dang thing we went through once before.
Right.
And anybody can't see that is as blind as a bat.
I know. Well, I'm glad you made it back. I don't know what else to say. And I hear, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I hear in your voice the anger from 40 years ago. So
you hear it right.
Yeah.
I volunteered with Marines. I had no idea what I was getting into. I grew up with what I like to call the John Wayne syndrome.
Right.
I thought war would be cool. I found out different.
I think most people who experience it do change their minds, and they realize that war is what it is. It's brutal, violent, destructive, death. It's body fluids all over the place. It's screaming. It's arms and legs blown off. It's blood on the street. And there's really no. I mean, a John Wayne movie. And you know the thing that really pisses me off, Mike, is because John Wayne was a draft dodger.
I'm not even going to go there. I believe it.
No, he really was. It's well known that he did everything he could to stay out of World War II, while some of his buddies, like Jimmy Stewart, went into Stewart was a bomber pilot.
Yes, he was in
World War II. A lot of the Hollywood types volunteered and went into combat, whereas John Wayne did everything he could to avoid the draft, even to the point of volunteering to make Department of Defense movies in favor of defeating the Japanese and the Germans if they would just not put him in a uniform and send him where he could have had his ass shot off. So it's so often the case, the people that we model ourselves after or think we do when we're kids turn out to be less than what we thought they were. You know, I mean,
sure. It makes you wonder what Lee Marvin thought of him.
Now, Marvin was a combat veteran, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was in the Pacific.
That's right.
He did movies with John Wayne. So it makes you wonder what he thought of John Wayne.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, well, Mike, thanks for checking in. Take it easy, okay?
I'll do that, and it was great talking to you. Thank you.
All right, sir. I appreciate your call. Now, see, that's what I'm talking about. I don't know him from Adam's house cat. I'm sure we'll never meet. I'm sure he's probably the guy that just called. I'm sure he's a decent man. A good guy. Oh, it was 2001 when Colin Powell danced on the stage. Yeah. In Ho Chi Minh City. But the last caller, I wonder, and I bet he does too, I wonder if he wonders, you know, how different, and in whatever way, it doesn't make any difference, but how different his life might have been if he wouldn't have been exposed to what he was exposed to. That's what I meant about, I feel sad for non-vets. I don't feel sorry for him. I don't do pity. I just don't, you know. I'm not that arrogant. I'm not that condescending. You know, people do what people do. People are motivated to do what they do because they're motivated to do what they do. But Vietnam was the war in my life. And while I did not serve in that war, I just feel I feel just a profound sadness. And it's not arrogant. It's not condescending. It's not patronizing. It's just a sadness. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.